Welcome to the Back in Time podcast with Kyle and JD, where every week we jump into our DeLorean, cruise to 88 miles per hour, and travel back in time to review our favorite films. Every week we talk about current cinema, the latest trailers, and we pick a new favorite film every single episode.
But I need a nuclear reaction to generate the 1.21 gigawatts of electricity.
1.21 gigawatts!
Don't say that! Never say that! Goonies never say die!
Now, here's your host, Kyle Autry, and his co-host, JD.
Welcome back to the Back in Time podcast, and welcome to episode 31. I am your host, Kyle Autry, joined as always by my co-host, JD. JD, how are we doing today?
I got a booger in my nose the size of San Francisco, so you tell me.
I would tell you the pickets, what I would tell you.
Good man.
Pick that booger, buddy. One of the things I love doing is we have this DeLorean. Let's jump back to last week real quick and talk about our last episode, The Big Lebowski. JD, what kind of feedback did you get from Big Lebowski?
What I'm hearing is from a lot of people who, like you and I, hadn't necessarily seen the movie in a few years. And, you know, people, the feedback that I was getting is remembering how awesome and how funny that movie was. And it was so great to hear people be like, you know, I was listening to you guys talk about scene by scene and like laughing in my chair, wanting to watch the movie. And that just made me want to watch the movie again.
Yeah, I had a buddy tag me on Facebook saying that he was watching the movie because he had just listened to the podcast. So I thought that was really cool. So shout out to you, Big Cat. Thanks for watching the movie and listening to the episode. We appreciate it. And we appreciate all of our listeners at Back in Time Pod, and we thank you guys for hitting the download button on today's episode. Please subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts. That helps us grow, gain new listeners every week, and also make sure you guys never miss an episode. Doesn't cost you a single penny to do that. Also, shout out to our sponsor, Bunny17 Media. Go there for all your books, comic books, and gag presents. Go there, check that out. You type in promo code back in time at checkout and you save yourself 15% off your entire order. I wanted to start South by Southwest has been going on this week. I've been hearing some really good things from a couple movies I'm really jacked about. The first is Ready Player One, that initially earlier in the week I had read that they were tracking box office numbers for Ready Player One and they were going to be pretty much subpar. But now the feedback coming back from South by Southwest is everybody is falling in love with the movie and it's getting amazing reviews. Have you been listening to any of that stuff? And also, how excited are you to watch that movie at the end of the month?
Yeah, I've been hearing the same stuff too. And I think that in terms of what we have out in the cinema, we have like a little bit of a lull going on. Black Panther's, you know, slugging away and still doing a great job. A Wrinkle in Time is sort of underperforming from what I can tell.
Floundering for sure.
So I think Ready Player One is going to come in and it's going to come in with, you know, it's going to come guns a-blazing at a great time. And I think people are going to respond very positively to that sort of retro nostalgia that it's got. And I'm very excited for it. Like, I can't wait to see it.
I'm going to make a bold prediction. They're saying right now somewhere between 35 to 50 million. I'm going to say 70 opening weekend.
I wouldn't be surprised at that at all. Like, it's in a prime position to do well.
Yep, especially now that we've got good reviews coming out. So I'm excited for that. The other movie that's making quite a bit of noise right now, and funny that I say quite a bit of noise because there's actually very little noise with this movie, it's called A Quiet Place, directed by John Krasinski of The Office, and also starring John Krasinski and Emily Blunt, which I believe is his wife, right?
I think that's accurate, and if it's not accurate, they should get married and invite us to the wedding.
I agree. We can expect our tickets in the mail. Probably never. Have you heard anything about this movie, and have you seen the trailer?
I have seen the trailer, and I saw a trailer a little bit ago, when the initial one was released before the South by Southwest run that it's going through, and It made a splash when it had initially come out. And I know a lot of people were saying some good things and some bad things, but I'm hearing nothing but good things from the event, right? I mean, like, it's doing well.
Yeah, it seems to be doing really well. And that's going to come out the week after Ready Player One. So Ready Player One's going to come out March 29th, and this will drop April 6th, the next weekend. So you can bet that butt. I'll be going to watch both of those movies first week, and I'll have a short review for you. I also went to the movie theater today, shout out the movie pass, as I always do, and I saw The Strangers, Pray at Night. I know I texted you a little bit about this, but I have to say I was pleasantly surprised. I kind of lowered my expectations initially, and then I had read a really good review from a podcast that we follow on Twitter, and I just was kind of blown away at how this kind of stuck to the original as far as like the feel of it. But then it had a lot of cool little twists and stuff that I did not see coming. And a completely different ending than the original, too, which I thought was good. You can't keep doing the same thing. Are you planning on going to see this one? I know this is one of your favorite modern-day movies.
Yeah, again, The Strangers, in my opinion, is hands down one of the finest horror movies that in recent memory. And definitely the sequel is on my list. Everything that I've read said that it sticks to what, you know, the theme and the atmosphere that the original created. Mm-hmm. I mean, you saw it. I mean, is that correct?
Yes, very much.
So I think if it does that, which is hard to do because the first movie was so like insane with the world that it created with like very little building blocks. So to be able to replicate that is like, I don't know, like if based on what you're saying, I'm sold. Like I am definitely in.
Good. Good. I think it's definitely worth seeing. There's another movie that I just found out about this coming week that is in the process and being developed right now by creator David Chase. And that is a prequel to The Sopranos. Now, obviously, the star of The Sopranos is no longer with us. Rest in peace. Do you have any interest in a prequel to The Sopranos?
I'm actually a super huge fan of The Sopranos. I recently watched my way through the series and loved every minute of it. And so the idea of them doing like a prequel, you know, starring Junior and Tony's father, I think that could be really effing cool. And from the thing that I was reading is setting it alongside like real historic turmoil that took place in the Jersey area in, I believe, the 60s?
Yeah. Yep.
I don't know. That sounds like a home run to me. And if I'm not mistaken, the original Sopranos first episode was intended to be a film.
That could be correct. I don't know about the origin of that first episode, but I started getting into Sopranos only a couple of years ago, and I got through like 3 or 4 seasons really quick, and then I lost my HBO privileges.
So, oh, that'll happen.
Yeah, gotta pay the bill to keep using it, apparently.
No, I'm super, I read that same article and I was super stoked by it. I think that could be a really cool movie.
Yep, I agree. I'm definitely in. That'll kind of wrap it for big topics for the week. Let's do some intro to Carrie. So Carrie is a 1976 American supernatural horror film based on Stephen King's 1974 novel of the same name. The film was directed by Brian De Palma and produced by Paul Monash, with a screenplay by Lawrence D. Cohen. The film received 2 Academy Award nominations, one for Sissy Spacek in the title role and one for Piper Laurie as her abusive mother. The film featured numerous young actors, including Nancy Allen, William Catt, Amy Irving, and John Travolta, whose careers were launched or escalated by the film. Also relaunched the screen and television career of Piper Laurie, who had not been active in show business since 1961, 15-year layoff. Carrie was the first of more than 100 films.
Hey, Kyle?
Yep.
Real quick, let's make sure to mention that it also stars PJ Souls from Halloween fame.
I'm glad you brought that up. We're definitely going to talk a lot about PJ in the review.
All right, that's fine.
I have not forgot her or her red hat.
Okay, sorry. Don't mean to start. I just wanted, yeah, PJ Souls, she looks fine.
Of course, as always. No, you're good. So Carrie was the first of more than 100 film and television productions adapted from or based on the published works of Stephen King. JD, what was your first impression of Carrie and some of the stuff we just covered here?
My first impression or my rewatch impression?
Give me your rewatch impression.
So my rewatch impression was much different than I remembered, and I didn't come into rewatching it with a lot of hope. You know, we watched the trailer and I was kind of like, okay, this looks cool. A lot of like angsty 70s chest hair going on. But man, I was, from that first intro scene, like drawn into this film. Like De Palma did an amazing job of shooting this movie and setting up his shots, and like everything about what he shows you and how he shows it in this film is remarkable.
What else has De Palma done? Do you know any of his other work?
Scarface?
Wow.
Maybe you've heard of it. A little film, no big deal.
Yeah, that movie's made a couple bucks. Looks like he also did James Bond, Dressed to Kill. Directed that. And Untouchables.
Yeah, he's got a great lineage of films to his career. And to think that he did Carrie, based on a book by Stephen King, starring Sissy Spacek and John Travolta, it's just a tornado of success.
Mm-hmm. Carrie was the first Stephen King novel to be published and the first to be adapted into a feature film. In an interview in Port Charlotte, Florida, at a public appearance near his home on the Gulf Coast on March 20, 2010, King said he was 26 years old at the time and was paid $2,500 for the film rights. He added, "I was fortunate to have that happen to my first book," and he had no regrets for only getting paid $2,500. How would you feel, though, if this was you? You got $2,500, the movie's made, you know, well over $100 million between box office and DVD sales. Obviously, he's done well prior to that, but had he not had another hit, wouldn't you be a little bummed out for Stephen King here?
A little bummed, but you have to be excited about your first poke. I mean, yeah, he was looking to beak and move from, you know, from the page to the screen, and he got a good taste.
That's true. In one of the interesting facts, and I'll cover this in a couple minutes when we get into that, but I believe at the time he was working at a laundromat making $1.60 an hour. So $2,500 probably felt like he hit the lottery. Probably wasn't too mad about that. Let's jump into some interesting facts here. One of the first things I had is Nancy Allen claims that she never realized her character was going to be so evil until she saw the finished film. She thought herself and John Travolta were playing such self-centered, bickering morons that they were there more for comic relief. Piper Laurie, on the same hand, also thought the character of Margaret White was so over the top that the film had to be a comedy. Any thoughts on that?
That's a really funny, like, you, I don't know, like, I never really necessarily think of the actor's perception of the role that they are sitting in if yeah. they don't like fully like aren't inundated or like drowning in the story to know like where their role fits into like the bigger picture. And so that's really funny to think that they thought that they were the bumbling idiots, because that's how they come across alone in their scenes. But yeah. they play such a pivotal cog in everything that Carrie goes through. And then same with Piper Laurie's. She is so over the top, but at the same time, like, she plays such a great foil to like all the different characters and the role that they play in Carrie's downfall or uprising, however you want to look at it.
Yeah. So to go along with that, at one point, the director, Brian De Palma, had to take her to the side and personally tell her it was a horror film and not a black comedy like she thought it was, because she would constantly burst out into laughter between takes, because not only was her characterization and wardrobe laughable in her eyes, but the dialogue itself was humorous for her. To this day, she still refers to and maintains the movie as a black comedy. Found that interesting. Sissy Spacek would intentionally avoid socializing with the other actors on and off set. She would stay in her trailer or hide in the corner or behind the set. Also, before this happened, she warned the actors that although she loved them, she would be avoiding them so she could stay in character. She told them they would have so much fun together after the movie was finished. Thoughts on that?
I love that because that definitely comes out in her performance.
I know we talked about this on the teaser trailer, but just to verify that this was correct, Sissy Spacek was 25 years old at the time of filming, and the character Carrie is 17 in the novel. I think you commented that she could have passed as like a 15-year-old. The way she looks, so.
Oh yeah, definitely. She looks young.
The success of Carrie at the box office cemented Stephen King's name as an author. King himself was delighted with the film. The prom scene that they shot took over 2 weeks to shoot and required a total of 35 takes. We're definitely going to talk a lot more about the end of the movie here in the prom scene. But any thoughts on the two-week shoot there?
I mean, the prom scene takes up easily one-third of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, that doesn't surprise me too much that it took 2 weeks for them to film because it's a massive chunk and is easily, you know, so much of the effects and both visual and practical of probably the film's budget went into that.
Definitely. It kind of reminded me of Scream. When we reviewed that one, they even made t-shirts for that movie because that the ending at Stu's house party, I think that was like 17 days maybe.
Ooh, that's a really good comparison.
Yeah. In Carrie's house, the statue of a religious figure shot with arrows represents Saint Sebastian, and it is not a crucifix and does not represent Jesus Christ. I think in the notes I even refer to it as the crucifix and Jesus Christ, so that I found that interesting. Going back and looking at that. Did you put those two together? Did you know what that represented?
I'm sorry, this is the statue that's in Carrie's closet?
Yeah, in the closet that she gets stuffed in.
No, I thought that definitely was the Christ, and it's interesting to note because especially the way that Piper Laurie's character, and we'll talk about this later, goes through her mishap.
Yeah.
No spoilers. Is in their bodies are in the same exact position. Which is not Christ-like.
No.
And so I did not know that, so that's very interesting.
In a 2010 interview with the AV Club, PJ Soul said that Steven Spielberg often came to the set at Brian De Palma's invitation because De Palma told him that there were a lot of cute girls down there. Soul said that Spielberg asked out most of the women on the set. Soul's included and Amy Irving was the only one who accepted. And Irving and Spielberg would marry from 85 to 89 and have one child together. If I'm one of the girls on set, I mean, you got this guy going around just asking everybody out. I mean, it's borderline a little creepy, is it not?
I mean, you know, when you've got the thirst to beak, yeah, it comes off as creepy.
Interesting. I will say Amy Irving, very cute in this movie. I liked her as Sue. Linda Blair auditioned for the role of Carrie, but turned it down by fear of being typecast. Do you think she missed out on this one?
I feel like, yeah, maybe she missed out a little bit, but Sissy Spacek definitely was literally born for this role.
Mm. Yep, and I've got a couple other actresses that tried out for the role of Carrie. Jill Claiborne also auditioned for the title role, but was passed over. Farrah Fawcett also auditioned for the part, but dropped out due to scheduling conflicts with Charlie Angels. And then Melanie Griffith also auditioned for the role. So they actually did not see Sissy Spacek originally, and her husband was working as part of the crew, kind of talked the director into giving her a shot to audition. And she came in with no makeup, just put like some Vaseline in her hair, and walked out and delivered her audition and got the part. So good on her. Now, there's a couple other guy roles that I had for interesting facts here. John Ritter was considered for the role of Tommy Ross. Could you imagine John Ritter as Carrie's date to the prom?
I actually can because a lot of the music reminded me very, very, very much of Oh, shit. What was the TV show he was in?
Oh, I knew you were going to freaking say that. Three's Company, right?
So, yeah, a lot of the music in this movie reminded me of Three's Company, and I just thought so much about him and Suzanne Summers that I could totally picture him as Tommy Ross and Suzanne Summers as Carrie. How great would that have been? Maybe. Yeah. I don't know.
I agree. So that's going to wrap it up for interesting facts. We're going to take a quick bathroom break. We'll be back on the other side with a clip from Carrie and the full review.
I need fuel.
Back in Time pod listeners, I want to tell you about a new partnership that we have. We've recently just partnered up with Bunny 17 Media, an independent publisher that is home to a variety of books, comic books, graphic novels, and more for children, teens, and adults. JD, tell our fans a little bit about what they have to offer.
Comic fans will love titles such as Scorn, the story of a teenage vigilante seeking revenge for his best friend's murder. Ouch. Blasto the Clown! An unlikely superhero whose powers come from a cursed enchilada! That one actually sounds really cool.
Yeah.
Twisted Magic, about a woman trapped between an unclear past and an uncontrollable future.
What about our fans that like don't read comic books, though?
Oh, dude. Comedy fans will enjoy Kevin Hates Everything, Brain Farts, Secondhand Boogers,
like Person's
Bay, and How to Quit Being an Asshole in 5 Easy Steps.
Hold on. You're telling me there's a way for us to quit having you be an asshole all the time, and it's 5 easy steps?
Apparently.
And our listeners get like some type of discount with this too?
Yes, but I'm staunch that you guys can't stop me from being an asshole in 5 steps. Bring it.
Awesome. So our listeners, go over to bunny17media.com. Use the promo code BACKINTIMEPOD. You get 15% off your entire order, only for our listeners. That's bunny17media.com, promo code BACKINTIME, and you get 15% off and support our podcast. All right, we're back from the bathroom break. We're ready to jump into the full review. JD, you still with me?
I'm let the audience know I'm wearing my pants. There's a little bit of snowflakes in the air. Yeah, dude, come on, let's rock.
How are we with the booger situation?
You tell me.
Sounds like it's still there. Better blow it. All right, so the film begins with a shot of girls playing volleyball at the high school. Carrie misses the ball as it goes past, and the girls start giving her grief as they go to the locker room. One girl tells her to eat shit. Inside the locker room, we have some very naked, scantily clad women who are just frolicking around in the locker room and in the shower. I think this is what every guy probably thinks goes on in a women's locker room, but it really doesn't, but they play it up for the movie. The camera zooms in on Sissy Spacek showering. We've got a booty shot here. And then she starts washing her face with a bar of soap. JD, what the fuck is going on here? And I feel like this is too much for a movie.
I definitely feel like this is not the kind of scene to open a movie with in 2018. but I think Brian De Palma does a great job of sort of setting the scene. The shots that he uses, the music that he uses in this scene to sort of take in the landscape and sort of illustrate the problem that Carrie's facing against the problem that she's facing out in the rest of the locker room is like a great juxtaposition. And, you know, and I honestly did not remember this scene. And I did not know where this was going. And when it hits its stride, I was kind of like, well, they went there. He does not bite the curb.
So we'll get to that part of the scene in a minute. And I get your point, but the first 30 seconds of that is him just being creepy McCreeperson. Like he's literally just filming these girls with boobs bouncing, shots of their ass. Like I don't think there's any thought behind that other than we're going to get some hot girls on tape here, on film. And then he gets into the part that sets up the story. So I'll give him a little bit of credit, but I like where your head's at. I like you give him credit. We see Carrie showering, and she's putting her hand between her legs, and all of a sudden we see period blood start going down her leg. Carrie comes running out of the shower, asking the girls to help her. She's asking for help when the girls start throwing tampons at her. Again, JD, I don't know what's going on here and why they're throwing tampons at her and nobody seems to want to help her. But the gym teacher finally comes in to the shower to calm Carrie down. And in order to calm her down, she smacks her in the face as hard as she can and tells her to calm down. The girls turn to leave. We've got our first shot of PJ Souls as Norma. And then we've got a light bulb that blows in the shower. We're definitely going to talk some PJ Souls in a second. But what did you think of this scene here with the period blood and the gym teacher?
Again, I think that at its heart, this scene is beautifully shot. It's beautifully directed. I personally don't understand the reaction of throwing tampons and towels at a girl as she's cringing at her first period. Like, damn, you girls are savage.
Yeah, I guess that was... Maybe we've got some older audience members that can tweet at us and tell us if that was the norm in the 70s to do that. Man, that seemed intense. And we grew up in the early 2000s where, like, anything went in the locker room. Like, I remember reading a story about a football team that shoved a broomstick up a guy's ass. I mean, it was like anything went. Couple of things here. First off, the gym teacher, Miss Collins, she might be the hottest out of all the girls, number one. And then we've got PJ Souls, who's wearing her red cap that she keeps on the entire movie, which I think is awesome, which I believe was actually ad-libbed by her. Any thoughts on the teacher or PJ Souls?
If you're asking what I think you're asking, and we've discussed PJ Souls before in previous episodes, if yes. You know, go ahead and listen to our episode on Halloween and we get into a little PJ Souls action. She's an amazing actress. And she nails this role. And I definitely think that she's, in my opinion, she's the one that I sort of like magnetized to. You got the teacher, I'll take PJ Souls.
I'm not mad at that. So Carrie sits in the principal's office. Miss Collins has blood on her shorts. Mr. Morden, the principal, tells Carrie to take the rest of the day to go home. He keeps calling her Cassie instead of Carrie. Carrie stares at an ashtray, and he calls her Cassie one more time, and she yells, "It's Carrie!" And the ashtray flips over, and she walks out. On the way home from school, Carrie is called a name by a young kid on a bicycle, and seconds later, he crashes and nosedives, and it seems like Carrie did that with her mind. It was pretty cool. What'd you think of that?
I love the way that this kid is like weaving in and out of the trees and right. He's calling her Creepy Carrie and she just makes him bite dirt
and like, kick rocks, nerd.
So it's the second time that we get to see or at least be hinted at that Carrie has some sort of otherworldly power. And I don't know, I can see like what you're saying earlier about Piper Laurie being like, this is a dark comedy because watching that kid eat mud is hilarious. He just face plants and like I rewound that scene 3 times just to laugh at that kid and be like, you loser.
So we meet Carrie's mom, Margaret White, in the next scene, played by Piper Laurie, was nominated for an Academy Award. What were your first thoughts on Piper Laurie and Miss White? What did you think of her character in this initial scene here, trying to talk this lady's daughter into a church retreat of sorts?
First of all, Mr. White. No, that was a cool scene. It was a good way of introducing her and Piper Laurie's character and to establish who she is and how unhinged she is, but without necessarily like showing like how way out in left field she comes from.
I thought it was really rude. The lady gave her $10, which in the 70s, that's like handing somebody a 20. And then on her way out, she stops and she's like, I pray that you find Jesus. And then she leaves. I was like, give me my $10 back. You're going to be rude about it. But buy me like 10 McChickens. Carrie's mom enters the house next. The phone rings. I assume it's the school calling, but we can't really hear anything. But Carrie's mom looks up at the ceiling a couple times during the conversation. Carrie makes her way down the stairs. Her mom immediately hits her with a book. And then she's reading the book called The Sins of a Woman. And I've got a clip here. And we'll listen to Carrie and her mom.
You're a woman.
Why didn't you tell me, Mom?
And God made Eve from the rib of Adam. And Eve was weak and loosed the raven on the world. And the raven was called sin. Said, the raven was called sin.
Why didn't you tell me, Mama?
Said,
no.
The raven was called sin.
Ooh, woman. And the raven was called sin.
And first sin was intercourse. First sin was intercourse.
I didn't sin, Mama.
No. Say it.
I didn't sin, Mama.
First sin was intercourse. First sin was intercourse. First sin was intercourse.
And the first sin was intercourse, Mama. I was so scared. I thought I was dying. And the girls, they all laughed at me and threw things at me.
And
Mama.
Eve was weak. Say it.
No, Mama.
Eve was weak.
No.
Eve was weak.
No.
Eve was weak. Say it.
No, Mama.
Say it.
Eve was weak. Eve was weak.
When the Lord visited Eve with a curse. And the curse was a curse of blood.
You should have told me, Mama. You should have told me.
What do you think of this scene here with Carrie and her mom?
So it's definitely like an escalation of just how crazy Mrs. White is. And you don't know, like, you don't have a point of reference for the relationship between mother and daughter. But yeah, to see her just, like, choking down biblical truth at her daughter is very unsettling. So it puts us as the viewer in a position to be like, okay, well, we can relate to Carrie in that, stay away from me, you crazy overlord.
Right. Now, I was going to say, the end of this scene is so intense here, where Carrie's getting pulled by basically her hair into this closet. Then her mom blocks it shut and she has to light a candle, and Saint Sebastian, who I thought was Jesus Christ, apparently it's not though. And that's not what it represents, the crucifix or anything like that. But this was just really creepy. Like, I can't imagine being a young teenager and having my parent like shove me into a closet in pitch black and then block the door so you can't come out. Like, what did you think of that?
Yeah, that's definitely a situation that would produce serious mental, physical, emotional trauma.
Yeah.
And like, that's no good. That's like, and I think all parents need to get like a parenting 101 book that says, do not do this to your child.
Yeah, I would agree with that. So what seems like hours later, Carrie finally exits the closet, thanks her mother, gives her a kiss, goes upstairs to go to bed. And then the camera follows her upstairs and she's crying. She's looking at the mirror and then she shatters the mirror with her mind. Her mom rushes to see what happened. Carrie's got the door blocked. And then finally she allows her mom to come in and the mirror has been put back together. And Carrie's just like, no, I'm just sitting here praying. Well, what's going on? What do you think of this scene here with the broken mirror?
So this is the third time that we see Carrie's potential horrible powers.
Yeah.
Right? Like, she's got, there's something secretly deep within her, but also there's a deep secret shame in her that she doesn't want her mommy to know, so she needs to fix the mirror.
Right. Definitely. She's still afraid of her mom, even though she's really powerful. At this point, she's still, you know, like, leave me alone. And she wants to curl up in a corner. And anyway, the next day, the kids in the class are screwing around. They're throwing stuff back and forth. The teacher's reading a poem. The camera focuses on Tommy, blonde-haired kid. He's got a head of hair on him. The teacher says, anybody have any comments? And Carrie comments that she really liked the poem, which was written by Tommy. That's going to come into play later in the film here. Miss Collins calls roll for class next, checking to make sure everybody's there. She tells Chris to spit out her gum, and she also tells Norma to wipe that smirk off her face, and then she goes on to tell the entire class that what they did yesterday was really shitty. And I like that she rips into the girls here for really bullying Carrie. And then she gives them a week of detention, and the detention will be with her on the field. And she's basically going to run their butts off and exercise them to death. What do you think of Miss Collins here?
She is fair and she is scary as hell. I can see why you like her.
Yep, for sure.
No, her punishment, I like that she gives the two extremes of the punishment, because either, you know, the 3-day suspension and you're not going to prom, or 5 days, your ass is mine.
Yep.
And that's, if that's not the 1970s gym class in a handbag, like, you know, shout out to all of our listeners that remember gym class in the 70s. I hope we have some. But I mean, how seriously, like, so many horror movies and thriller movies and scary supernatural movies all have that reoccurring theme and fear of gym class was horrifying.
Yeah. Let's talk about Chris here. She's played by Nancy Allen, who many of you may remember as Officer Ann Lewis from all three of the RoboCop movies. JD, I know you're a huge fan of the movies. Did you notice her right away, since she's, you know, quite a bit younger here?
She had her trademark bitchy face on, which was great for her. And, you know, she had a little bit of chop later in RoboCop for the hair. But, I mean, she looks good.
No, I think she does a great job as Chris. And we're going to talk a lot more about her as we go. So we're on the field next. The girls are doing jumping jacks. I love that Norma, PJ Souls, is still wearing the red hat, and she's also wearing matching red shorts while everybody else has different color shorts on. So they really play up this whole red thing that she has going on. And then we've got a montage of just different exercises, the jumping jacks, the sit-ups, the push-ups. Eventually, Chris gets fed up and approaches Ms. Collins, and she tells her there's 10 minutes left to get back in there, keep exercising. Chris tells her to stick it up her ass. Ms. Collins smacks her in the face. Chris starts crying and tells the girls that they got to put an end to this, and if they stick together, they can do it. One of the girls tells her to just shut up. Man, the times have changed. Can you even imagine if you heard of a gym class teacher just smacking the living shit out of your kid?
I would tell the teacher, you have my blessing. Smack my kid again.
It's interesting. I think we're only maybe 15 minutes into the movie. I've seen at least 3 smacks in the face now. 2 by the gym teacher, 1 by the mom with the book.
And yeah, that sounds accurate.
We've got more coming. And not only do we have more coming, but we've got butt chin. John Travolta's in the next scene here, and we're introduced to Billy Nolan. JD, what's your favorite John Travolta movie, and why is it Face Off?
I will definitely say it is without a doubt Face Off, because we get to see a movie where two actors get to pretend like they're acting in a role of interpreting how someone else would act while acting like who is acting like them.
That's perfect. That makes total sense to me. Not only that, but I mean, Nicolas Cage is the one that really shines in Face Off, but we'll save that for the full episode, because that's coming down the pipeline at some point.
Can we also talk about the movie Michael? Because he's great in Michael.
Yeah, go ahead. What do you want to say about Michael?
He's great in Michael's with his overalls and his little angel wings. And his butt chin, of course.
So Billy and Chris are driving down the road. He appears to be big man on campus here. People pull up. They start like yelling to him. You know, some girls come up and they just start screaming. They're like, oh, Billy. And then they park the car next. Billy attempts to get out, but Chris starts licking and sucking on his fingers. Then they start making out. Chris eventually pushes Billy off of her to start fixing her hair. Then they start arguing, and then Billy backhands Chris. That's the force slap. That's now the second backhand that she's taken to the face now in the last couple minutes here. I'm starting to feel really bad for Chris in getting smacked around this entire movie. Any thoughts on the slap here? Or the scene with Billy and Chris getting sitting in the parking lot.
Okay, to be fair, so butt chin Travolta, he backhands her twice in this sequence.
Yep.
But he warns her. He says, "Don't call me that name," and she calls him a shit, and so he backhands her. So in 1970s logic, right?
I guess. was born in 85, so I don't know 70s logic.
But I don't know. The 70s were such a different kind of a place where, you know, we have such a great amount of... We've come a long way since these movies, is what I'm trying to say, in that it was so socially acceptable for him to say, don't call me that name, and then she did, and the result is a slap. Like,
yeah,
I couldn't imagine doing that.
No, I can't either. That would make me sick. The thing that kind of struck me about this is not only does this slap not even faze her, but then she goes in and starts making out with him in the next scene. So she's just like, oh, did you smack me? Okay, you want to make out now? Sure. I mean, it's so weird what they're doing. It's so foreign to me.
I know. It's just like, you've watched the remake. Is that included?
I definitely don't remember that in the remake at all, but I could be off.
Okay. Yeah, because I'm like, I mean, it's for the film, it's a decently important to set up their characteristics and, you know, in the 70s to make the male more masculine, you would have him just slap the woman, which obviously that's no good. And you can't do that anymore. So I just didn't know if
I think they cut that from the remake.
Okay.
Let's talk about what happens after they start kissing. She starts kind of making her way downstairs here. And she's like, I got something important to tell you. It's something, you know, really important, Billy. And she just kept repeating that over and over again. And she eventually goes down stairs where Billy's little friend is. And she just keeps saying over and over. Meanwhile, Billy's like, who the heck is Carrie? And then they cut to the library. We see Carrie there. But I don't. What are they doing? I didn't understand this scene at all.
Dude, this scene was weird as heck. Like, she's they're implying that she has a mouthful, and yet she's talking completely like, oh, I hate Carrie, Bobby, I hate Carrie, we should do something against her. And it's like, which one are we doing right now?
Yeah,
I can't pause my disbelief in both directions.
So Carrie is approached by Tommy next in the library. He says he doesn't have a date to the prom next week and wants to know if she will go with him. Carrie turns around and runs out, says no. How's she ever going to get a date if she acts like that? I mean, what's her deal here?
Well, you know, T-Money's got his Canadian tuxedo on with his magnificent blonde curly hair.
Yeah.
And if he's approaching you in a library and you're running away, like, I agree with you. Like, it's not looking good for her prom date.
Let's talk about Tommy's giant rug on his head. I haven't checked in recent years to see if he still has the hair. I know he's still very much in a lot of film. Have you seen him recently, and does he still have that magnificent head of hair?
No, I looked up his IMDb and I was kind of surprised to see exactly how much he's been in. Like, this guy gets around in TV shows and films. So, you know, shout out to you, Tom. If you got that hair, I would love an 8x10 glossy.
Signed. Miss Collins tells the girls to start working on the exercises they did yesterday. She walks down the stairs to talk with Carrie. They go into the locker room and she's staring at the mirror. And Miss Collins tells her she's beautiful and she wants to know, you know, what's been going on and if she's been treated okay. And then she tells Miss Collins about Tommy asking her to prom. So in the next shot here, Miss Collins is talking with Sue and Tommy, and she wants to know why they're trying to ask Carrie to go to prom. She tells them that Carrie isn't that stupid, and neither is she. Tommy gets mad at the accusation, and so does Sue, who insists that it is not a joke and that they're just trying to be nice to her. Are you buying this nice guy act from Tommy at this point, or you feel like he's up to something?
Oh, yeah. No, I totally buy Tommy's nice guy act here. Like, he seems completely innocent. And I think he is, like, given the fact that, you know, she was just like, hey, ask Carrie to prom. I feel like he's just a really nice guy.
Yeah. And he arrives at Carrie's house next. Carrie seems really nervous that he's there. Tommy, again, wants to know if she will go to prom with him. She insists that she can't go. Tommy says he's not going until she says yes. Carrie's mom starts yelling in the background, and Carrie's now begging him to leave. And she finally gives in and says, okay, she'll go, and shuts the door, and Tommy leaves. Thought this was really nice of Tommy. He shows up at the house. He's just like, I'm not taking no for an answer. What'd you think?
I think it goes into showing that Tommy is a legit nice guy. His intentions, while they might not be, you know, he's not asking Carrie because he's like, oh my gosh, I'm so in love with her. It's not like a 90s rom-com type of a thing, but he's legit in wanting to ask. Like, that's how I take it in this moment. Like, he legit wants to ask her out. Like, he's committed to taking her to prom.
Meanwhile, we've got Billy and a bunch of his friends go to a pig farm. One guy says, come here, piggy. I'm going to bash you in the brains. This is so 1970s here. The fact that they're even able to get in there and they're walking around with sledgehammers. Good Lord. What did you think of this scene here where Billy starts sledgehammering a pig?
So I was so surprised in like seeing this scene because it has been a long time since I've seen Carrie, and it immediately reminded me of the scene from 11/22/63, the Hulu series starring James Franco, where his character Jake is taken out to the slaughterhouse and is forced to, they try to get him to slaughter, I believe it's a cow in that okay. miniseries. And so, like, I was, like, immediately drawn into the fact that maybe Stephen King has the sort of, like, death wish to animals.
Hmm.
Because the way that they destroy the pig with the sledgehammer, it's so effed up.
It's a little creepy, but I can think of several other movies that involve, like, torturing animals that he's written about that have been turned into movies or film.
Not in Thinner.
Well, definitely not in Thicker.
Ellen Thicker.
The off-Broadway show, Thicker. Carrie and her mother have dinner next. Carrie tells her that she was invited to prom. Her mother immediately throws a drink in her face. Miss White threatens to throw her in the closet. Her mother says, to the blood comes the boys. Her mom tells her that she's not going. And she gets really upset. She goes into the kitchen and is about to shut a window when Carrie slams every window in the entire house. She says she's going and things around here are going to change. Her mom calls it Satan's power. Carrie says that she can move things with her mind, and she's read in books that other people can do it too. Miss White says that that's what happened to your father, and that's why they took him away. And Carrie says, we all know what happened to him. He ran off with another woman, and everybody knows it. At the end, she says she's going to the prom, and that's it, and she doesn't want to even talk about it anymore. So Carrie's now standing up to her mom. What do you think of this scene?
Dude, she's a total Carrie Russell and Felicity now.
Nice reference. I like that.
Thank you. Billy, but no, in all seriousness, like, does this not completely remind you of the scene in Waterboy where Adam Sandler learns the true nature of what happened to his pappy? That's all I could think of this whole time.
In the next scene here, we've got Billy, and he's got a bucket of pig's blood, and he's attached it to the rafters in the school gym, and he tells Chris to keep your tits on, and maybe I'll let you pull the rope when the time comes. She's been trying to pressure him to hurry up. I've never heard that before in my life. Again, that's a 70s thing, but what'd you think of that scene with Billy?
Dude, I feel like if you ever tried to use that phrase on a woman, you are just asking to get your jaw relocked. Keep your tits on? Really? And this is John Travolta pre-Scientology, if I'm not mistaken, because it's not until it's Saturday Night Fever that he gets, like, really deep into that whole mess of stuff.
Yeah.
So I wonder if they made him pay for that line.
Very well could have. I don't know a lot about Scientology, but yeah. Now the girls are gossiping next about Tommy taking Carrie to prom. Sue tells another girl that she asked him to take her, and Chris reveals her plan to Norma on what she's going to be doing at prom. Carrie in the next scene is trying on lipstick. Tommy and his boys are in the tuxedo shop. Carrie's in her bedroom next, getting ready. Her mom wants to burn her dress because everyone can see her breasts. She says, take it off. We can burn it together. Miss White says she's not coming. Miss White says he's not coming. Carrie tells her to stop. She's already nervous enough. Her mom starts scratching herself to try and hurt herself. Carrie tells her to be quiet and throws her down on the bed. Again, with her mind, not physically. And her mom tries to get up again, and Carrie throws her back down on the bed. And her mom now is calling her a witch. Tommy arrives, and Carrie leaves, and they arrive at the prom. And we'll get to that scene in a second. But what did you think of the scene up in Carrie's bedroom here with her mom?
It was a very tense scene. Like, it was very, like, the give and take between, you know, what they do between mother and daughter, and Carrie's checking out the window, and she sees in at the one point, like, it appears like there's a cross, like, etched out onto the street. I don't know if it's like a crosswalk thing going on there, but there's a lot of foreshadowing, you know, between what Piper Laurie's character is saying and what Carrie is saying. And it's really intense. And for her to go completely Professor X on her mom.
Yeah.
And, you know, like, it was just like, Carrie's got this. Carrie's ready to get her corsage on. She's ready to get her punch on. She's ready to get her prom on.
So Carrie and Tommy wait in the car. She tells him that she's scared. Tommy ensures her that they're going to have fun and that he would look pretty stupid out there dancing on his own. And she smiles, so he gets out of the car and they go inside. I've got some music I'm going to insert from the dance. I thought having a live band, number one, was really cool. I love that aspect of it. Yeah, I went to prom, I think, 4 different times in high school. Not one time did we ever have a live band. I always thought that would be awesome. JD, for you guys, DJ or live band?
Well, I went to prom once.
Oh, you're not popular. That makes sense. What?
How'd you go to prom 4 separate times?
So I dated an older girl when I was a sophomore. So she went to her prom as when she was a junior. And then the next year, we went to her prom again, and then my prom. And then my senior year, I went to my prom.
I think that adds up to 3, but
it's 4.
Props on you.
1 sophomore year, 2 junior year, 1 senior year.
Oh, different schools?
Yep, different schools.
Oh, okay, there it is. Yeah, no, I went to prom once. It was awful. My date was a banshee from hell, and she was horrible, and I hated her.
Wait, she was the band chief? Like American Pie?
No, she was a banshee.
Oh, okay.
She wishes she was a band chief.
Nice.
Needless to say, we got kicked out of Six Flags Great America.
For what?
That's a different story for a different day.
Okay, great. Now, Carrie tells one of the girls at the dance that she made her own dress. Miss Collins comes up to Carrie. Tommy leaves so they can talk for a second. And I've got another clip here of Miss Collins talking about her prom.
I had a date with the captain of the basketball team, and he was 6'7" tall. So I went out and bought a pair of 3-inch spike heels so that our kiss goodnight would be less awkward. Right? So anyway, we went in his pickup truck, which of course broke down, and we had to get out and walk the last half mile to the prom. So by the time I got there, my feet were so covered with blisters that all I could do was just sit there, you know? I mean, I couldn't dance. So we just sat there and just talked. And it was magic. Is it like that for you? It's nice. Just nice.
No.
It's like... Mars. You'll never forget it. I don't think I will.
What'd you think of the scene here with Miss Collins and just kind of talking with Carrie about her prom experience?
Yeah, Mrs. Collins Opus is a great character. and she brings a lot of wisdom that I think acts as like a foil to Carrie and sort of like diffuses a lot of the tension.
Yeah.
So I really like what she does as the character, and I really appreciate her as a teacher. I wish I had a teacher that could.
Yeah, but doesn't really get her too far. We'll get to that in a minute. But so Tommy comes back to the table. He wants to know if she really has to be home early. She says she does. Tommy's looking to be here, it feels like. Did you get that impression?
Yeah, I definitely think there's a little ripple of beak that Tommy wants here that I don't think he necessarily anticipated.
A ripple of beak. God, geez. Okay, so they get up and head to the dance floor. Carrie said she doesn't know what to do, so they start dancing. She steps on his foot. She apologizes right away. Tommy kisses her here. I did not see that one coming with the kiss. I knew he was looking to... There was a ripple in the beak, but I did not see him kissing her because his girlfriend's the one that set this whole thing up. Now he's kind of stepping out on Sue. What would you think about that?
I think Carrie has that kind of like animal magnetism, right? That like I think Tommy is like... I think there's like an extra layer in this story that maybe the novel gets into, which like maybe digs into that sort of like primal reaction that Tommy has to Carrie, which I think like Can't Hardly Wait maybe gets into. Because Can't Hardly Wait is essentially Carrie without the murder.
Sure. Yeah. Okay. And it's so definitely like, not, but yeah, I like your bullshit.
But maybe
those two movies could not be further apart. But I mean, if you believe it, it shall be.
It's not a lie if you believe it. So I think that Tommy is sort of reacting like intrinsically to something that Carrie's giving out. So like he's like drawn into like the moment.
Yeah. Okay.
What did he you might think also of- be drunk and stoned and high and all sorts of 1970s.
Are you on some LSD? Who knows? What do you think of the camera work here where Tommy and Carrie are dancing and the camera just starts going around them like faster and faster and faster? Like, honestly, I got dizzy watching the scene. I had to look away.
I know. I think, like, again, directorially, everything that De Palma does is it's fantastic. He mixes edgy shot with like long shot, like close shot. It's very, like you say, it's almost disturbing.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it was freaky just to watch it. So we're about ready to start voting for king and queen. Carrie says, oh, here we are. And their names are on the ballot. Back at the house, mother is chopping a carrot with a giant butcher knife. I'm not sure if this was supposed to be like foreshadowing or something, but it definitely put off a strange vibe with the carrot. The ballots are being collected now by Norma and Freddie. They collect them all, and then they kind of go into a corner, toss them on the ground, and then Norma just kind of kicks them behind a stage. Underneath the stage, we see Billy and Chris. The camera pans up above the stage, and we see the bucket of pig's blood. The winners are announced. It's Tommy Ross and Carrie White. Carrie can't believe it. It's so tragic to see how happy she is here, knowing what's right around the corner. But we won't give that away yet. So they start walking slowly to the stage. Carrie's eyes are watery. Sue watches on with a big smile from behind the stage. We get up onto the stage. They hand Carrie the flowers. The bucket is inching closer to the edge here. All the students are cheering, clapping. Miss Collins looks so happy. They take the picture. She's got the crown on her head. And then we see the rope leading up to the pig's blood, and Sue finally recognizes the rope. Sue comes out from behind the stage, and she sees the bucket right above her head. She runs over to the stage. Miss Collins, meanwhile, is looking at Sue and watching her making her way to the stage. Sue goes to stop Chris and Billy, but Miss Collins pulls her away and leads her out of the gymnasium, and finally the blood comes pouring down from the ceiling on Carrie. And she is drenched with blood here. Billy looks up to see what the blood came from and sees the bucket. And then he turns his attention back to Carrie. And the bucket falls and hits him in the back of the head and pretty much knocks him out. What do you think of the scene here, JD?
The first comment that I want to make is the epic comparison scene that Degrassi does on Rick Murray.
Okay.
If you've not seen Degrassi, Kyle, I hate you.
I have not, so you hate me.
But this scene has been done over and over and over and referenced countless times throughout movies and TV shows, including Degrassi. Shout out to all of my Degrassi lovers. And it's so effing tragic, and you can't help but echo what is to come of, you know, Carrie hearing her mother's words. They're going to laugh at you. They're going to, everything's going to go wrong, and it does.
Yep.
If there was so much foreshadowing that her overzealous religious mother, if she had only listened, like, you can't help but be like, oh, how was Piper Laurie right? Oh, Miss White. Right.
So, yeah, and that's what we see. We've got Carrie just standing there and the voice of her mother saying, they're all going to laugh at you. They're all going to laugh at you. And she stares at the crowd and they're all literally laughing at her. Even in her head, Miss Collins is laughing at her, which we know isn't true. The kids try and exit the prom. Carrie blocks the doors from opening, then turns on a fire extinguisher hose and starts spraying everybody. The lights are getting drenched, so we're getting some electrocution going on. Carrie looks possessed standing on the stage. The principal goes to grab the microphone off the stage and gets electrocuted. Miss Collins, poor Miss Collins, she gets crushed by a giant prop that swings from the ceiling and basically cuts her in half here. The entire stage lights on fire, and Carrie slowly walks from the stairs and down onto the gym floor. Now, as we pan out, the entire gym is engulfed in flames. The door finally opens to exit from the gym, and Carrie leaves, and the door slams shut behind her. Holy shit, this scene was nuts. What did you think of this scene here, JD?
Dude, it gets... I love the comparison that you made earlier when you talked about how it is equivalent to the last 30% of Scream. It's... And I never thought about that comparison until we now watched Carrie, to think that, like, strategically the way that the film and then Scream is set up to have everything set up this, like, last avalanche of shit. And that's exactly what we're witnessing and what we're seeing. And Carrie is so stoic and just, it's miserable.
Yeah.
And the way that it's shot with, like, the cut screen... And the way that the colors come in and out, and, like, I don't know, it's brilliant and frightening.
The crazy part is, like, 76, we've got no green screen. Like, this fire that you're seeing in the gym, they had to really light that thing on fire. So props to the special effects department and everybody that worked on that, because, I mean, they lit that entire gym up. And hopefully nobody got hurt. I never saw anything about people getting hurt. But anyway, we've got Carrie walking down the street next. Chris, who is driving Billy's car, floors it and tries to run Carrie over. Carrie does a quick turn, sees the car, and flips it over. And eventually the car catches on fire. So it's hard to feel bad for her when she's now killed a couple hundred kids after getting the blood dropped on her. I mean, that was obviously tragic for her, but now she's killed like 200 innocent kids. And poor Miss Collins. I can't believe she did that. JD, what'd you think of the car flipping scene?
I feel like that a good amount of the budget went to this car flipping scene, right? And we just...
900,000 of the 1.8 million.
Right, all right into that. And like you said earlier, special effects were a different beast back in 1976. So it's an actual car flipping with an actual driver inside.
Ugh, that guy had to get dinged up. Shout out to that guy. Carrie goes into her house next. We've got candles lit everywhere. We've got an organ playing in the background. Carrie makes her way up to the attic. She enters the bathroom, and her mother, being a total creep, is standing behind the door, but she doesn't come out yet. She's just standing there being very quiet like a statue. We have a shot of naked Carrie here. I wasn't mad at that. She may look 15, but she's actually 25, so, you know, we can let that slide. Carrie comes out of the bathroom and calls for Mama, and she pops out from behind the door finally, and she wants her mother to hold her. Miss White starts crying and saying that they live sinlessly before all this happened. We got down on our knees to pray one day, her and Carrie's dad, and she smelled whiskey on his breath. She says she could have given her to God when she was born, but now the devil has come home. Will you pray with me, Carrie? Carrie agrees to do it. Then her mom starts praying and says this will be the last time they ever pray. She reaches for a butcher knife and stabs Carrie in the back. Carrie falls down the stairs. She holds the butcher knife high in the air. Carrie slides backwards into the kitchen. Her mom has this sick look on her face. And she wields the knife high above her head and she's about ready to strike down on Carrie. When Carrie begins throwing knives at her own mom, one of them goes right through her hand, right into the wall. And then we've got several that hit her in the chest. She moans here and then eventually her head just kind of plops over. Carrie curls up in the corner and the camera pans out and her mom looks exactly like the saint, whatever that thing's called, that was in the closet. It's kind of eerie how they look similar.
Saint Sebastian.
There you go. Saint Sebastian. Carrie pulls a knife from her mom's hand and grabs her. The house begins to crumble as Carrie goes into the closet door with her mom, and the house catches fire and it just starts melting like butter. The Saint Sebastian doll has the arrows on its body, and that's kind of the last thing we see as the house crumbles into the ground. What did you think of the death of Carrie and Miss White?
This last little bit of the house imploding on itself reminds me of Poltergeist, reminds me of Amityville Horror, reminds me of all of those other haunted house type movies that we've seen. Obviously after Carrie, and it's such a tragic scene that, you know, her mother's going to stab, Piper Laurie's going to stab Carrie. Like, that's messed up. Come on, right. Be a good mom. Come on, help her sell Girl Scout cookies. You don't stab your daughter. But it's great to see the retribution that Carrie gets to strike back. And she, like she said earlier, like, she's in control. This is what she wants, how she wants, and she's playing the cards.
Yeah.
And she implodes the house, and she sucks all of the evil and all of the unnecessary bullshit that she's had to deal with into that, like, burnt to a crisp ground.
Yep. Now, the last scene here, we have Sue lying in bed. Her mom goes to answer the phone. She tells the person on the phone, oh, thank God it's you. We can't handle one more reporter. Yeah, she's been sleeping a lot. Doctor said she's young. Maybe she'll forget about it in time. In this next shot, Sue is walking towards Carrie's house. It's now just literally rubble with a cross on there that says for sale. And written on there, it says Carrie White burns in hell. Sue goes to the cross to lay some flowers next to it. And then a bloody hand reaches up from the rocks and grabs Sue, who sits up in the bed screaming, and her mom holding her as she's having this terrible nightmare. Kind of reminded me of the ending of A Nightmare on Elm Street. Even like the lighting, very white and clean in her bedroom that next day. That's the ending of the movie. The credits roll. What did you think of the ending of the movie here?
Dude, I completely 100% agree with the comparison to Nightmare on Elm Street. Like, I thought the same.
Yep.
I'm going to go out on a limb, and I'm going to say that my overall interpretation of the ending and of the movie reminded me a lot of Chronicle. You remember the movie Chronicle from like 2008?
Yep, sure do.
And that, like, this is like an origin story to like a massive supervillain. Okay. Carrie, and she comes back from the dead, but she learns her power through great trauma and great stress. Like, I think if there's sequels down the road, she is joining the Brotherhood of Mutants, and her and Magneto are just fucking shit up.
So this movie is now 42 years old. How would you say the film has held up over the years?
Better to me, like, having not seen it, you know, like, removed a decade or two, like, rewatching it, like, I thought I was gonna fall asleep during this. Like, yeah. I legit thought I was gonna hate this movie and I was gonna curse our fans, and I rewatched it and I was sitting up, I was clapping, I was just like, oh my goodness, like, thank you guys for voting this film in, because it was so much better than I could ever have imagined.
Yeah. I want to thank our audience as well, because this was definitely a pleasant surprise. I didn't, like you, I didn't expect it to be as energetic and to keep my attention. I definitely thought there were going to be times where I was going to snooze off. They did a good job throughout the entire movie. So everything went well. I thought this was a great movie for us to review. We're going to be back next week with another movie like we always are. So on Monday, we'll be out with the teaser trailer for The Terminator. And then on Wednesday, we'll have the full episode. JD, what do you look forward to most when we get into the teaser trailer for Terminator?
Nudity, obviously, always.
Schwarzenegger?
Schwartz and nudity.
Nice. Schwartz and noodle. I want to also thank our sponsor, Bunny 17 Media. Go to bunny17media.com right now and pick up a comic or funny gag book for a friend. Use promo code BACKINTIME at checkout and save yourself 15%. Please remember to also rate, review, and subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts. But it is that time of the episode for us to turn on the ignition, climb back into the DeLorean, and punch in today's date, and return back to present day. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you on Monday.
Yo, bitch, Mr. White.
This means your future hasn't been written yet. No one's has. Your future is whatever you make it. So make it a good one.